Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're going to learn about how we really think. How we really know. What do we know? How limited is our brain? Or how vast is it? We're going to find out all these things today, tonight, whenever you're listening to the show. But we're going to understand more about our nature, our true nature of reality, of who we are, because we're going to be talking about the quantum field. And this is a very important subject matter to all of us because we live in the quantum field all the time. It's good to know it better. Get acquainted with the quantum field. And to help us do that, the author of a book called Life and Spirit in the Quantum Field is on the show with us, and he's going to talk about this field and what it really means. So I want to welcome Doug Bennett to the show. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you, Peter.
I'm so glad that we could talk about this. I loved your book. As a matter of fact, I want to say to the audience that this is not a book I'm suggesting. It's a book I'm directing to people, too. I don't know how people can go without it. It's that important in our understanding of life and ourselves and each other and the future, even. It's so important to understand ourselves in the concepts of the quantum field that this is a must-buy. So I'm really putting it out there that some books are really essential to understanding life better. So I want to thank you for writing this. It was a great opportunity for me to gain clarity of this science that I actually have been teaching about for a long time because the basics of it are fundamental to intuition and spirituality. And I've been teaching about it, but not with the great detail and depth of understanding that you create in this book.
Thank you, thank you.
So I'm very interested in plowing through the material reality that we live in every moment to reach this place of resonance that we also live in, but we're not as aware of. And you start the book really going into the science of it, talking about quantum theory, quantum physics, and understanding how protons and electrons work. And where do we find them?
Where do we find
electrons and protons, atoms? When we will go look for them, where do we find them?
They're everywhere. I mean,
right.
Photons, for example, are you know what we see with, and we can even perceive a single photon. The dark adapted eye is capable of perceiving a tiny little speck of light that is a single photon, which I find just amazing.
So we can actually find at least photons by seeing. We see, therefore,
yes,
there are photons. And electrons and protons and atoms exist because of matter. Matter exists.
Right.
And yet, what does quantum physics have to say about their reality?
Well, quantum mechanics added quantum mechanics started 100 years ago or so. In fact, it was just 100 years ago in 1912 that Heisenberg, quantized electrons and therefore made it possible scientifically for atoms to exist. Prior to that, the science would not allow atoms to exist. But quantum mechanics introduced this non-material aspect of matter. And from the very beginning, people were aware that how people talked about the quantum field sounded a lot like how the Taoists and Buddhists talked about the spiritual world. And that is, people have talked about that for 100 years now, and lots of books, The Tao of Physics, The Dancing Wuli Masters back in the 70s, all observe this similarity. but it's, and what they were trying to do was connect us high-level humans to the quantum field. But there has not been, as far as I know, an explicit mechanism for doing that. A lot of people say, well, you know, because electrons can be non-local, then somehow we can be non-local, or some aspect of us can be non-local. And that's not enough. That doesn't account for it. So the quantum mechanics is about matter and electrons and protons and all that.
Well, that sounds very kind of obscure for us.
Sorry.
No, I mean, that's where we're starting from. And that's it's very helpful to know that, you know, there's a science out there that is, you know, ages old. Einstein was a big part of this.
Yes.
And then there were scientists, David Bohm and Carl Pribram, who have added their take on it. So let's talk about brain science too.
All right, that's the next step. That's the missing step.
Right, and so we're all of the idea that our brains do all the work, that there are all these, you know, different connectors, dendrites, and whatever in our brains that manage our thinking and store our memory, and it's there somewhere. But it's all there are hundreds of thousands, I guess, of these little nerve endings in our brains.
Oh, there's 12 billion neurons, and each neuron has 1,000 to 10,000 synapses.
So we can't be simplistic about it.
There's lots.
Yeah, so there's billions. All right. And I was... I'm of that. I'm not a brain scientist, so to me, even hundreds of thousands sounds like a lot.
But it is.
But it's amazing how complex our brain is. So a lot of scientists believe that, well, with all that complexity, everything must be there.
Right.
So, what's true about that?
Well, it appears to be true, in that if you mess up the brain somehow through disease or injury or whatever, that the brain function is impaired. So it looks like, indeed, that it is local. But that's kind of like saying that all those little people on television, you know, the ones that walk around and talk and sing and sell you pharmaceuticals.
They're really inside the screen.
They're inside the television. And how do you know? Well, if you take a screwdriver and poke around inside the television, you will damage or destroy the little people. So they're in the television.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not true. Television is a receiver, and I think we can say the same thing about the brain. The brain is a wonderful receiver and transmitter, but Pribram and the folks at University of Arizona Center for Consciousness Studies have pointed the way to say that our thinking really takes place in the quantum field. It is a quantum process in the same way that an electron is a quantum process.
So, but then a lot of people say, okay, so the quantum field is in our brain.
Well, yeah, well, yes, it's in everything, but...
it is.
our form, our physical form, and our individual thoughts and all that represent instances of the growing and changing information that is in the quantum field.
Okay, so we are actually a result of the quantum field.
We are I like to use the term projection.
I like that.
We are a projection of the living, breathing stuff that goes on in the quantum field, in the same way that an electron is a projection of all the possibilities for that electron that are in the quantum field. And the electron you see, you know, on your television screen is represents one instance of all those possibilities.
So the instance is created through, from what I understand, through the observer.
That's very common. I always have a little trouble with that, in that it sort of implies, observer usually means us. And I have a little trouble with the notion that, well, nothing really existed in material form until we came along. You know, all those 14 billion years of evolution of the universe. So I'd rather say that this collapse into material reality happens because of interactions. Whenever a photon hits a leaf, it collapses into a real photon and, you know, makes a little food in the leaf. So it's interactions of any sort, including consciousness.
But even the leaf, no matter what color it is, it's still only atoms and electrons and protons,
yes,
and neutrons.
Which are really nothing at all, because there's nothing solid in any of that.
Right. So what makes it solid?
The Higgs boson.
Oh, of course.
Which they just found, you know, with much fanfare.
Okay.
The Higgs boson gives things the property of mass, even though there's really nothing there. It's all energy.
Right. So our experience of a leaf as mass, or our bodies as mass, or our chairs that we're sitting on as mass, is still objective and doesn't need us?
I think so. I think stars formed and, you know, went through their life cycle and went supernova and all that kind of stuff without us.
Right. But let's just say, that because I'm looking at the hologram aspect and the projection, that, mm-hmm, that it all is a projection of consciousness.
Yes. And I'm glad you said that, because that is a conclusion that just really hit me after I finished the book, is that everything is consciousness. Even everything, the field is consciousness, and so even electrons are an expression of the consciousness of an electron. They're not real smart, they're not very creative, but it is the same mechanism, the same medium. The electron is thinking, you know, as well as it can, and it collapses into these material states every once in a while. And the only difference between us and electrons is that we have bigger wave functions, if you like.
All right, but we
can write country songs.
Sure, and that's because we are aware, and the awareness factor actually can collapse these minute particles into form.
And the whole in my final conclusion, the fabric of the field is intelligence, consciousness, and awareness.
Exactly.
So when we say that matter comes from observation and awareness, I think that's true if the observation is being made by the field, not by our material bodies.
Well, let's get back to that, too, in another way that's mentioned in your book that I really appreciate, is that we think we're directing anything.
Yes.
And we aren't. We're being directed to direct.
Yes, but I believe that we do have choice, and we do contribute to, I shouldn't use that word, we do affect our contribution, unfortunately, for the consciousness, you know, for the regular free will people. The choices we make are not conscious choices. They are made by our feelings, often subconscious.
And they're patterns.
And they're absolute patterns. You know, we can see them in our lives. We can make the ones that bother us better if we choose to. Everything, I think, is evolving through choice.
Now, in terms of choice, There are a lot of people out there who don't want to hear any of this talk. Those are the Newtonians and Cartesians.
Right, right.
Who are part of the mainstream. The mainstream is greatly afraid of what we're talking about. And
well, that's changing.
Right.
Slowly. But
because the origin you talk about in your book is the Inquisition.
Right.
Now, let's just help people understand why we have this split and why there are the materialists and then the spiritualists and why the two haven't been able to get together for so long.
Because poor old Descartes, who spent his life doing really amazing things, he worked on just all kinds of things, spent his whole life being afraid of being called before the Inquisition. And so it was his proposal that got the Inquisition off the back of science. And he said, the transcendent mind is, and I don't remember the exact word, different from, separate from the material body. And so the church could have the transcendent mind, you know, the soul and all, which is what they're interested in, and that's really separate from the material body. So it would be okay if science messed with the material body.
So then science could then experiment and come up with new ideas without being afraid of the church, because it says, don't worry, you've got your domain.
Yes. And there was even, for a while, there was even some debate about exactly what the relationship or the connection was between the transcendent mind and the material body. They wanted to say there was none at all, but clearly the mind seemed to, you know, direct what the body did, so they allowed that. Well, the mind can direct the physical movements of the body, and that's all.
Right. So now we're coming back to the future,
right.
Long time since Newton and Descartes had these fears and concerns about the church and the Inquisition, and yet they created a meme or an archetype that science is still working in.
And science has been pretty scrupulous up till now about adhering to their end of the deal.
Exactly. So science has always been afraid of stepping into spiritual realms.
Although I was, you know, and that's absolutely true, and I went through, you know, high school and engineering school and took physics and all this kind of stuff, and it wasn't until just a few years ago that I learned that Newton, the father of the clockwork universe, was not happy with the clockwork universe that he created. And he spent 30 years of his life looking for spirit in science. And the science that he was looking in was alchemy. And he wrote over 1 million words on the subject, looking for spirit.
So why don't we all know about that?
Well, at the time of his death, the president of the Royal Society, of which he was a member, said that his writings on alchemy were not fit to print. And as I understand it, they were lost. All his writings on alchemy were lost up until they were found in the 60s or something. So they exist, but it's clearly outside the paradigm that we understand Newton in. And so It doesn't get much attention.
It's amazing.
I think it's such a
dichotomy.
Newton was looking for spirit, which is what I've been doing all my life. So I was happy to hear that I'm in good company.
Especially with the man who material science is practically named after.
Yes, absolutely.
That's wonderful. So then we come to the early part of the last century, when the quantum field was understood better. And then we developed these understandings through people like David Bohm and Carl Pribram about the hologram.
Right.
And how we live in a holographic reality. And so what I understood it at, and what I've been teaching about it for years, is that there are all these patterns around. And it takes our consciousness to put them into reality. So we are working with a field that's very vast, and it's a holographic field, so it encompasses everything. And then we have the opportunity to make reality of our own from it.
Yes, and I think the holographic analogy is correct on both sort of a symbolic level and a mathematical level. I mean, the quantum equations look very much like Fourier transforms, which is the math used to describe holograms. But I think there's an important distinction we need to be aware of, and that is that in the quantum field, things with no mass or little mass, like photons and electrons, can be distributed across space and time. And the equations are quite explicit that when things get massive, larger than photons and electrons, they become more and more local. So this notion of our life and thought existing in the field and all these patterns, archetypes, and that whole rich world out there depends on things being massless. So our thoughts and feelings have no mass. Those are what's distributed out there.
And that's why we can at times read another's thoughts. That's why people like me can work intuitively.
Yes. You can know things at any distance.
And I do. I do. I can read people's fields anywhere in the world, and even at any time.
Yes. And the reason for that is that our massless thoughts, feelings, and our health, actually, we haven't mentioned that, but our health is also a quantum process, and it is distributed in the quantum field. That stuff is everywhere. It's distributed. So an intuitive, someone who's learned to, learned what everybody really knows, but has worked on that ability, can touch anyone, anywhere, because everybody is right here.
Right.
The grammar isn't quite right, but...
No, I agree. Everybody is right here, right now.
Yes.
Even if they're from 100 years ago.
Yes.
And so people like me can tap into someone living in some other part of the world and even go back 20 years in their life and see their nature of health at that time.
And they've done some... there've been some experiments done with... affecting illness in the past, and it made changes. I mean, this is research that was done. It, double-blind experiments and all. So, yes, the past and the present and the future are distributed just like geometry is. Does that make sense?
No, because you understand that better than I do about geometry. It's just that if it's a hologram that is non-local and non-spatial, non-time, and there's no limit. It's in a reality that doesn't have limits like we do in the material world. And we can actually resonate with that and go into that through our brains, actually. And you talk about that in the book, that there are gateways in our brains that actually connect interdimensionally to this quantum field.
Another way to say that, as you said in our talks before, you said the field thinks us. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And so our thought and stuff is already out there. So this connection that we make is not from our material body out to the field, really. It is our distributed consciousness putting out some intention that resonates with some other consciousnesses in the field, and then we get the results dumped down into our material body.
Well, if we've already thought something, and it's out in the field, and now we're back in the present and looking into the future, or let's say the future comes to us, so right. we actually are given our own thoughts back to us.
Yes.
So it's a dynamic that's very hard to grasp.
Yeah, it is. And especially when you start talking about the future, one of the issues with the future and sort of about the past is the assumption that if we know the future, and we can, if we know the future, then it must be fixed.
Well, we're creating it even though we know it.
and you're right. You're right. So the future is changing, just like everything else in the field. So we might know it, but it might change by the time it gets here.
Well, and we're gonna have to have another show because we only get a half an hour at a time.
Right.
And there's so many deeper ways that this information can help our lives. Because it has to do with the power of influence and yeah. how much we can work in this quantum field or not. What are our limiting factors? How can we strengthen it? What does it mean for the future of humanity to have this information and work with it more?
It's really amazing. Although you got to be, I think one of the lessons that I got from the work was, we do have this amazing scope of influence that we can exert, but the influence is subtle. It's not like Harry Potter turning you into a chicken.
Right, and yet there are ways to be more powerful in that subtleness and ways to be
yeah.
less powerful.
Right.
And just this morning I had a conversation with a mathematician who's working on formulas and algorithms to influence consciousness on the planet. And it's kind of like the TV show called Touch. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's magnificent about using numbers and how they create synchronicity in all of life. And so there is a synchronicity that if we can learn that synchronicity, we can possibly even have greater effect of influencing it. But I think it's very important to know these, and we'll talk more about probability and how that actually limits certainty.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this book is such a treasure, Life and Spirit in the Quantum Field. And how can people learn more from you? What's your web address?
The web address is Doug Bennett's Quantum Life. That's Doug Bennett's Quantum Life, all one word, .com.
Great.
I think the title is as you quoted it, but the subtitle I'm rather fond of, Spirit is Real, Feelings Rule, and Other Adventures in Quantum Life.
Right, and so that's what we want to do more shows about how feelings rule.
Yes, very important in our patriarchal culture.
And what we need to learn about ourselves to be influential in this quantum field.
Yes.
Because
it's not what we learned in school.
Right. It's not about how smart you are.
Absolutely true.
Right. And the spirit is real thing is very important for so many of our listeners because it gives us a chance to understand spirituality and science together.
You don't have to keep it separate from the rest of your life.
Right.
So might want to be careful around the Newtonian.
right. But we now know about their secret life. Doug Bennett, thank you so much for being on Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me, Peter. It was a pleasure.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. And thank you so much for listening.